Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started.
We're sitting down with Corey Sanders, Director of Compute for Azure. We're going to talk about some, hopefully, compute, networking, security workloads, and some of the new announcements that have come out while we're sitting down here at Ignite and kind of drive through some of that. So we put together some questions ahead of time for you. I thought we could hopefully have kind of a fluent conversation about
free flow, of course.
What's going on in there. So I'm kind of interested, you know, our audience tends to be operationally focused, IT pros, so lots of PowerShell scripting.
Totally.
Kind of platform enablement, right? But one of the things we get stuck in a lot is IaaS land. We do a lot of lift and shift workloads, being consultative, right? That's kind of the world we live in. So it seems like there's been a lot of platform enablement to help customers move beyond those to adjacent or complementary workloads. Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about those?
Yeah, so totally.
I'm thinking maybe network security groups and even some of the new application security tie-ins that come in there. Mm-hmm. Being able to kind of operationally control some of those PaaS services a little bit better.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, one of the exciting things about some of the announcements this week is even with sort of your classic lift and shift, moving your infrastructure from on-premises into Azure, the set of services that we've launched sort of allow you to manage and operate them in a much more sort of PaaS-like way. And what I mean by that is that you've got a lot simpler set of experiences that we built in now. So some things that we showed, easier management of updates, easier management of security, right? Easier management of configuration. Easier management of change management and change tracking. And then, of course, easier management of costs and governance and so on. And so while you're still running VMs and you're still sort of running the exact workload that you used to be running, these controls allow you to both detect potential concerns, potential issues, allow you to monitor the health of your environment, allow you to track what updates need to be installed and so on, things that have been classically very kind of hard to manage and complex, especially in a hybrid way. Now you sort of have a service built in right into the platform to do it. And so I think this is very exciting, sort of change for the platform, sort of game changing for a lot of IT pros who want to deploy in a hybrid way and manage in sort of a fluid way between them. They now sort of have a mechanism to do that.
Yeah, no, I think that's all great. Yeah. So even things like service tags, like huge enablement feature,
of course.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of bring people up to speed on what's going on there?
Specifically with service tags? Yeah, totally. So like, you know, one of the things that you can do is you can effectively tag as part of any deployment, and whether it be virtual machines or sort of full applications at the resource manager level, you can add tags to them to be able to track them more effectively. And so, you know, some of the usage cases for this, especially with CloudIn, which is a cost management type solution, you can start seeing the costs that different parts of your organization are spending, right? How many VMs are spinning up, exactly what they're doing with those VMs, or you can sort of get a view based on those tags and subdivide based on those tags. And one of the things that we announced even just this week is now you can enforce a policy that will either block if you don't put a tag, audit if you don't put a tag, or actually put a tag and force it onto the creation so that people who are creating machines are basically jammed with tags to make sure that when you're managing a large environment, you'll make sure everyone's going to run with those tags. And so it's really sort of enabling a lot simpler management in the environment.
Yeah, hugely environment. So being able to pick up some of those operational controls and, like you said,
Exactly.
insights. So hopefully this makes people think about things like tagging taxonomies and
you got it.
How we're going to tie all those workloads back in later. And then I think that also contributes a little bit to some of the defense in depth story as well. So there's been some updates around application load balancers, traffic manager, brand new DDoS service, right? So now you've got this kind of holistic ecosystem of, you know, things to choose from as we're
different services and so on.
We're getting ready to bake our cake and we've got a bunch of ingredients. What's the best way or kind of how should people approach that to walk in and choose, you know, should I be using a WAG or a WAF or, you know, 10 million other acronyms, right?
That's right. Yeah. The networking tools and services can sometimes become truly an alphabet soup, as it were. You know, what I'd say is this, you know, one of the services that we that we've had for a while that I think is really beneficial here is the Azure Security Center. And the reason why this is so beneficial is it's got a bunch of different capabilities, but one of them is this prevention capability where you can basically flip this on and it'll tell you, hey, you've got a virtual machine that's got a public endpoint, right? You may want to put that behind a WAF. Right, and so it'll actually give you, and you can then even say, great, show me some partner options for what a WAF means. Like, okay, oh, Barracuda's got one, right? Or, you know, and so it'll basically expose these options to you to be able to pick straight from there and be able to deploy. Other examples, hey, you've got a load balancer facing the internet. Do you want that to be an internal load balancer versus an external load balancer? So, you know, this is one of the nice things about what we're doing with that security center. It's this live prevention detection service that then can give you this guidance and sort of guide you to, hey, you may want to consider running a DDoS service for this. You've got a lot of front ends, right, which means you have the higher risk of DDoS attack, and it all uses machine learning to try and predict what type of recommendations to make.
Yeah, so let's drive you into better, kind of more right-sized workloads depending on, yeah, on what you've got out there.
That's right. Oh, and so, yeah, and it also does, it's not just sort of the security lockdown, but, yeah, we also, from the cost perspective, getting you into the right sizes, into sort of the right configurations, the right availability configurations. This kind of runs the full range.
And based on the way you're talking about it, I imagine that service is going to continue to grow over time with its learnings and recommendations. Because I think it gets a little bit confusing quite often when we come from like on-prem or hybrid workloads.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading a little bit last night about VNet service endpoints and thinking about things we do in workloads today where maybe we have a site-to-site VPN or we do express route and then we privatize the whole thing anyway. We do forced routes and now we don't need to do that anymore.
So that's right.
Can I get some cost benefit or some operational benefit to be able to spin that stuff up better, faster, stronger?
Right. And that's, you know, and that's going to be, you know, a lot of that's also going to come down to comfort from customers and sort of what they're trying to accomplish. There are a lot of customers that come in and say, look, I'm going to do forced tunneling. I'm going to always send it back to my on-prem network. I'm nervous and in any other way, right? You know, I think over time we'll see more of, hey, look, all of this is protected behind the firewall. Fantastic, right? And so now I can connect to these different PaaS services, and with the endpoint protection, I don't have to worry about they've got public internet. Now I don't have to worry about forced tunneling, which can be a pretty big cost and management overhead to deal with forced tunneling, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's also, if you're in that world, it's a little bit of comfort.
You got it. Yeah.
I know how to
totally. These are the trade-offs. Totally.
I understand those rules.
Right. And look, I know how my proxies work. Yeah. And so exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All those kinds of things.
Yep.
Yeah.
So kind of in that same hybrid lift and shift vein, you also had the new Azure Migrate service come online. So that's going to provide some insights into, again, lifting and shifting those existing workloads.
Yeah.
So would the recommendation kind of be onboard into Security Center and a couple other things so you can continue to move that story down and move out of some of those IaaS workloads?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for Migrate, you know, the real benefit is it gives you a view of all your dependencies running on premises, right? So it kind of gives you a nice view of how you want to move instances into the cloud, if you want to move those instances in the cloud. You know, I think the general progression that I see from a lot of customers is, hey, step one, you know, figure out from my environment what's the right stuff to move into the cloud. Because not everything belongs in the cloud, not everything should move, right? Like, find the right stuff, you can get the biggest benefit, and then you can plan it out with something like Migrate, figure out exactly how you move it, what are all the dependencies, so on. And then as you said, as you move it in the cloud, you then start taking advantage of some of the cloud native capabilities, whether they're the management services, the cost management, the security services, or even some of the higher level services. You convert some portions to containers, right? You convert some portions to a managed PaaS, a data platform. And so you can kind of pick and choose how you want to do that. And that's really sort of when you think of both our hybrid strategy and our overall PaaS IaaS strategy, it's all about customer choice. What's the right thing for you? What's the right thing for your environment? And how do we get you there?
Yeah, let's do some enablement.
Exactly,
consumption and
exactly.
Get you to consume the right things along the way. So on the consumption front, you had a new VM size come up. You've got a new VM family, burstable VMs.
Yes.
Ben and I kind of come from a traditional SharePoint, Exchange,
sure,
for business, on-prem world there. What are some workloads that you think might be appropriate for burstable VMs? Or where does Microsoft see that going? One of the things that was confusing to me, just reading through the announcements in the documentation, it talked about the ability for effectively doing rollover minutes and kind of service credits.
That's right.
But then being able to leverage those credits once you had built up enough to burst.
Yeah.
So does that mean applications need to be aware of when they can burst, or is Microsoft kind of controlling that and creating it on the back end?
Yeah, good question. The best way to think about this is you have to be somewhat selective over what applications can run in this type of environment. And you mentioned SharePoint. Actually, this is a good one to speak to. I think Burstable, we've found, has been actually more interesting and more applicable to Windows workloads than Linux workloads, if you can believe that. And the primary reason is that Windows ends up having these periods of time that is very hungry, right? A boot, a good example, right? To spin up a Windows boot is very, very hungry, right? But then it oftentimes quiets down, right? And so for like a SharePoint farm, as an example, your SQL Server would not be good in Burstable, right? SQL Servers end up eating a lot of CPU, right? Just don't do it.
Just a little IO.
Yeah, just as an FYI, please don't do that. And if you do it, please don't call me. Like, I'm telling you, it's not going to work. But you can call me. I'll listen. But the front ends of SharePoint, actually, the front ends of SharePoint may actually work depending on your usage patterns, right? Where, SharePoint farms can go, depending on if they're only business hours, right? They can go all night with pretty much no one touching them. And their CPUs are running really, really, really low, right? And then there's bursts during the day. Someone goes and looks and so on and so forth. And we have seen successful stories with an application like that, where people will burst on the front end, do some action. And SharePoint's a great one because it's not really just a general purpose website. It is really people are performing a task, right? It depends how busy your SharePoint farm. I mean, there's a lot of caveats to it. But that's kind of a really good usage case for me, at least, of make sure your SQL Server's not doing it. Maybe your app tier probably even not as well. Maybe your app tier, depending on what you're doing. But like if you're running search in your app tier, please don't run it there. Your front end for sure could be very, very viable, but validate it, right? Now, and you can find out your credits and so on. But building an app to sort of respond to it, it's going to be really hard.
Yeah.
So it's like your app either works or it doesn't really. Yeah.
So what happens then? Say you build up a bunch of credits, you have a burst, and you run out of those credits in the middle of that CPU burst. How does it kind of, if the app isn't aware of that, how does it kind of balance that out, or what does it do?
It gracefully will slow you down to the baseline. So there's a baseline CPU that you're paying for with a burstable CPU. If you run below the baseline, you build up credits. When you use those credits, if you run out of credits, we gracefully, right? We don't cut it, right? We gracefully will slow down the CPU down to the baseline. So you will see a gradual slowdown. If your SharePoint's a good example, you will see it slow down, right? You will see the farm slow down. It will go down to sort of the baseline of performance. And so that can be, impactful. We have seen some folks look at this as like, great, I need sort of six endpoints, six front ends on my SharePoint farm or five or whatever. Hey, I'm going to do two as non-burstable and three as burstable, right? And so then I can basically make sure that if I do get a little bit of a spike, I can respond. I can maybe scale out at that. The SharePoint doesn't scale out as quickly as many other applications.
Scale up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You get my point. So I think those types of scenarios. It's a really compelling offer. It does take some work and testing to make sure it's going to meet your needs. And very strong feedback I give to people: please test it, please validate it, and make sure it's going to meet your application at the right sort of usage patterns.
Yeah. We want to be performant and not get that support call later.
It's slow, right? Yeah, and it's like this is the by design, right?
It's
you're
what you paid for.
You're getting a huge discount, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Can you talk a little bit about availability zones?
Yeah.
I'm kind of super excited about that offer.
Yeah,
equivalents and other cloud platforms, AWS.
That's right. That's right.
Things like that.
Never with the promise of this SLA, though. Let's be clear.
True, right? Yeah. And I don't think folks on the outside realize kind of what a monumental undertaking that is to implement a service like that and turn it on, and especially enable it for workloads outside of storage, where we've had zone redundant storage and geo.
But, right.
So can you dive into a little bit and kind of talk about where you see that going?
Yeah, the key thing is when we look at the continuum availability in Azure, customers are expecting a breadth of different options, right? Because different apps require different things. Obviously we start with single instances, and we actually have an SLA around single instance. We're one of the only cloud providers that has an SLA on single instance. And so to guarantee that just, if you're just running one VM, it'll stay up, right? And we feel good about that. our the availability set offer that we've had prior to zones was a promise of rack level availability, mm-hmm. right? And so physical separation of rack, physical power, physical yep. network, right? Zones has now taken us to buildings, right? And that's the way to think about this. We've had multiple buildings in our regions for a very long time. That's how we've scaled out. Many of our regions have many, many buildings. What we're basically doing is exposing these to customers and saying, look, if you have an application that you want to span multiple of our buildings, you can now, right? And so the additional sort of points of availability that this brings is additional availability around cooling systems, additional availability about actually separated fire, right? If there's sort of the firewall or fire protection between them. And then a little bit more network availability as well. So the networking, higher level networking devices are also now distinct versus rack level. Sort of you get up into the, L2, L1 and you're sharing devices. Over here, it's sort of only at the sort of top level router, right? And so that separation gives us this higher ability to have a higher availability, and then where our promise of 4.9s when the service goes GA will offer even a higher SLA around deploying across these two different data centers.
Awesome, and you're really kind of enabling customers there. So I can't pick a zone, right? I can't do zone A, zone B, zone C. You've provided me an SLA. I've bought into the service, and you're going to manage to that SLA.
Yeah, so there's two ways that you'll be able to deploy here, right? So you can basically come in and say, look, I've got VM1, please put that in zone 1 for me, VM2, yep. put it in zone 2 for me. And that's what some of our competitors do. We will also offer the ability to have VM scale sets just automatically span it, right? So if you're just like, hey, look, take care of my availability, we will automatically distribute you across the zones in the region and give you that high availability. So you'll have both choices.
Awesome. So I want to be all in. I want to do managed disks and kind of deploy compute.
And it'll take care of it for you.
Let you take care of
That's
it.
Right.
It's built into billing and kind of ready to go.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Perfect. So one of the other announcements out there too around kind of availability and multi-region.
Yeah.
You announced global VNet peering.
Yes. Yes.
So we've had things like that in other workloads. So yeah. Storage has had geo redundant storage.
That's right.
Kind of going back and forth, and customers have been kind of managing things on their own a little bit to transport data and push it around. Where do you see that kind of coming into play, or what workloads are you envisioning customers moving forward?
The requirement or the desire from customers to have their applications be globally accessible and reliable. Is not a new requirement, right? I mean, I think there's most enterprises are spanning multiple regions, spanning multiple countries, and want their applications to be globally available. It's just really hard. It's just a really hard problem. And you guys mentioned SharePoint as well. Like trying to do something like that with SharePoint on VM is very, very hard. Right?
SharePoint Exchange, even where it's built in.
That's right.
And
this is actually why Office 365 is so wonderful, right? Because it sort of makes that go away. But just any sort of application and thinking through sort of how to think about your data tier. How to think about your application tier and your front end, incredibly hard, incredibly complex. And so the way to think about this is we are, I think, leading the pack for building in the infrastructure componentry, right? So we talked a little bit about our disaster recovery support, sort of the automatic VM failover, network peering from a storage perspective, Cosmos DB as a platform can now span regions. And so all these infrastructure components are going in to enable this global application distribution. You should expect higher level services to start being built on top of that to really enable developers and IT pros to start thinking about how their apps can span the world.
Awesome. So, kind of close it out. So there's all these announcements and people are reading blog posts and things like that. I think, our audience knows they can go in and get free credits and, they can do an IT Pro Essentials
yep.
or things like that. Do you plan on releasing any kind of new courseware on MVA, or should people be looking to Channel 9? Where's the best place to go?
Yeah, so
kind of get
Channel 9,
CBT, some
Channel learnings? 9 is always good for sort of keeping up to date with the latest and greatest, and we do a lot of announcements there. And I actually have a show there that goes every Tuesday. Tuesdays with Corey, you got it.
It'll be in the show notes.
Okay, great. We do have a lot of new coursework actually that came out as part of the releases this week. So check that out as well, as part of MTAs as well. So that should be I can't remember actually some of the exact details, but constantly sort of updating that and releasing that.
Awesome, so, yeah. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Of course, absolutely. Thank you guys, and it's been fun.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.